Time for a message in the bottle. What, Kraftwerk was busy? Brought to you by Bangor Wine and Cheese Company, 86 Hammond Street in downtown Bangor. Eric Meehan in the house with us.
Hi, everybody. Is everybody calm? Is everybody relaxed out there in Radioville? Good, because this is the episode where we talk about German Wine and you get up and you talk about it. This is the time on downtown when we dance. For those of you listening who are younger drinkers, you might not have any idea what I just referenced either, which is very embarrassing. Although what's funny is you were just referencing the heady early days of Saturday Night Live, of which I did not even witness until I saw reruns. But they were great reruns, and I'm very jealous. That was the funniest story I've ever heard in my life. The brief recounting of his reading of the box. that's the stuff we all dream of.
Oh, yeah.
It really is. And absolutely. As soon as he got to the punchline, I started to sing along with it, too. I'm like, and I know what's coming up.
Along with the whole class.
Oh, it's so
good.
And then
the best part is that the teacher's like, see, it was inspiring, wasn't it?
You know what I say about Stephen King, with all due respect to whom, he invented nothing. He just paid attention. That scene could easily have been out of any one of a thousand Lampoon movies or Saturday Night Live sketches. I love that sort of stuff. Again, as it always proves, and we talked about this about songwriters a couple weeks ago, it's these people you've never heard of who are the ones that the machinations would not have machinated.
Yeah, the next time Alan Zweibel is on, and I can't wait for this, he will tell us how he tried to pick up a girl in the Anne Frank house.
Okay, see, this is what I'm saying. This is what I'm saying.
In the attic.
Where else?
Yeah.
Well, there's something to tune in for. You tuned in for me. I can't offer anything funny like that, but I can offer German wine. And in fact, we are sipping on some right now.
Yes, we are.
Again, Vicarious, that sort of thing. But you too could be sipping on this very German wine if you go to Bangor Wine and Cheese and pick some up.
And I said it when you came in. Oh, my word. Last week's wine of the week, the Brekka Rosé.
So good.
That was so wonderful.
That was a big hit. You know, it's this time of year when, we all like, you know, we're all Americans. We like the big, heavy stuff in the winter. And, you know, I love Maine winters because I get to, you know, bust out all the really fatty foods that I love to cook and, you know, heavy reds to go with them and blah, blah, blah. But this time of year, especially with new vintages coming in, new stuff. The Brekka Rosé, for instance, is a brand new product, period, made out of the oldest clonal variation of the Garnacha grape. This stuff is coming in now, and it really shines on days like this where it's warm. You're making stuff that has, you know, charring off of a grill. You're doing maybe some salads. Some fresh greens are finally coming in. So all these wonderful fresh visceral sort of flavors are playing with your nose and your palate, and wine just tastes great with it. I mean, it really does. German wine, we're going to spend the next 2 weeks talking about German wine, and hopefully I'll get to touch on some of the neighboring countries that we don't really talk a lot about, in deference to what I was just talking about, a nice Grüner Veltliner or Zweigelt from Austria also is wonderful at this time of year. So I'm going to try to get to that next week. But I always try to cover one of the most seemingly complicated and yet not so, but uber German things about the wine world, which is the system of classification that German wine has. Hopefully at this point, our regular listeners have, you know, been hearing about these words of appellation, right? Like where the wine comes from and specificity around that. Like this plot is, you know, aligned this way and this plot is done this way and this and this. But, and some places have, you know, specific grapes or a specific grape that you need to use, things like that. The Germans take it to a German level. I shan't malign it by saying it's absurd, but it's really hyper specific. They deal with things not only like the appellation, but they also deal with the grape. They don't assume that you know what it is. They tell you, and you tell them. They also deal with, And this is the most interesting part about it, and kind of we'll talk about why. They deal with the level of sugar that's left in that bottle of wine, from a simple level in some of the more simple wines to a very precise level in some of the more terroir-specific and subsequently sometimes more expensive bottlings. It's, as I put it in my notes, it puts a strong emphasis on standardization and factual completeness, right? If there's anything to be gained by reading the back label or the front label of a German bottle of wine, it's you really come away clear, provided you can speak German, and in some cases, ancient forms of German. So hopefully I can clear up some of that now, too. It was first implemented in 1971, so not too long ago, but right around the time when the world's wine industry was really coming online. Americans were starting to drink more wine. Everybody really was. Obviously, Germany was coming out of a period of reconstruction after both world wars, and they had patched up their relations in the European wine industry actually very quickly. If you read one of my favorite books, Wine and War, which is for sale at Bangor Wine and Cheese as well, you will read about those connections and how they basically, so people could feed their families on every side of the map, patch things up very quickly. Almost all of Germany's vineyards are delineated and registered. That's not the case in most countries, right? Even in France, which is hyper accurate and invented the appellation, you know, there's a lot of vineyards out there that are, you know, they're just kind of played with, their hobbies. Not so in Germany. So there are approximately 2,600 individual sites, what they call Einzellagen, and you can use the produce from any one of them to make a wine at any level, but it's going to depend, again, on all these specifications that the Germans have put on what you eventually put in that bottle. German wine country is kind of an interesting thing to think about, and I like to sort of bring it up. It is really right in the center of the country. If you enter Germany through Alsace, so right in the shadow of the Hart Mountains, you're really put into central Germany, right around the city of Cologne or Köln, and the German wine country kind of opens to the north and kind of to going east along several major river sites. But it's not Bavaria, it's not southern Germany or anything like that. Your dreams of Neuschwanstein and these kind of, it's not what it's like. These river valleys are cut out of schist, out of, they're very, very, very steep. The inclinations are extraordinarily dangerous, frankly, and you will see if you travel along any of these in one of those, you know, beautiful river cruises or whatever, you will see crosses of places where people have fallen to their death, which is another reason why the wines can tend to be very expensive. Not like you can just roll a tractor through there, you know. So it's just things to think about. So when the Germans are talking not only about where they are, but first the first thing you're going to see is and so in the case of the wine we're drinking tonight, this is a wine from the Leitz family. It is from the vineyard, is what it tells you. First of all, it's the Rüdesheimer Magdalenenkreuz. Rüdesheimer means it's from the town of Rüdesheim. Germans do a very, very similar thing with beer, as a matter of fact. So if you ever drink Dortmunder, it's from Dortmund. If you drink Reisdorf Kölsch, it's from Reisdorf. Anything that ends in an er, Einbecker is from Einbeck. It's because they recognize sort of the quality level of the area. So in this case, this vineyard, the Magdalenenkreuz vineyard, is in the town of Rüdesheim. So the first thing they're telling you, if it's a vineyard classified wine, is where it's from. And that, obviously, we've talked about, is important everywhere, right? Then the next thing you're going to see is the grape. And Riesling is the predominant grape of Germany. We're drinking a Riesling today. It is not the only grape in Germany, and we'll talk about some other grapes that you will find in Germany, but essentially, that is the next thing you're going to see. And you can see, you know, it might be the grape Scheurebe. It might be Pinot Blanc, which is actually found in quite a lot of places in Germany. And so you're going to find out what the grape is next. So they don't, like other places, assume that you know what's in that bottle, right? Like if you're in Burgundy and it's a red Burgundy, you assume it's Pinot Noir because that's what the law says. They don't do that. They're Germans. They're telling you what's in that bottle. And it's also actually showing you a little bit of like leeway, right? Like they're not telling you what has to be in that bottle as a wine grower. They're just saying, if you're meeting all these specifications that we're putting on you, it's going to be a wine of that quality, whatever that quality happens to be. The next word that you're going to see in this case is Spätlese, but let's talk about that. So there's you're essentially measuring the ripeness level of that grape, right? So you're measuring the level of sugars to the level of water, essentially. And so that's not necessarily, they call it a quality level, but it's not necessarily a quality level. It's a ripeness level. It's sugar content. It doesn't reflect, it doesn't even reflect the sugar content in the final wine. It reflects it at harvest. And the thing you can do, obviously, with sugar is you can ferment it or you can leave it alone. And so when you see, there's two words that you'll see, or you'll see dry and off dry because we're Americans and they tell us what it is. Thank you. But you'll see trocken, dry, or halbtrocken, which means half dry or off dry, right? So that you will see usually on lower level wines where it might, you know, in the teens, you know, the wines that they're going to label as quality wines, but not wines that need further specification. And so those you can, you know, they're usually dependable. They're nice for, you know, when you want a Riesling with your sushi on a Tuesday night, whatever, blah, blah, blah. But so you'll know that it's dry or off dry. Those are things to look for. So trocken, dry, halbtrocken, off dry. But then you get into, and this is my favorite part of this. Even though I'm of German descent, I always screw this up. Once you get into the QBA or Qualitätsweinbestimme Auenbergweite, a quality wine from a specific region. This must be from one of the 13 specific wine-growing regions, which is the Auenbergweite, and the region must be shown on the label, which is what I was talking about earlier. It's the good wines. Then we get into the Prädikatswein, which is the better wines, and this is where you're going to start to see the dryness level, the sugar level, the ripeness level in terms of Kabinett, which means literally cabinet, wine of a reserve quality to be kept in the vintner's cabinet is really where it comes from. It's good. It's got nice acidity. It can probably sit for several years and be quite lovely. Then you get to Spätlese, which means literally late harvest, but it's not the super late harvest like dessert wines, although it can reach those levels of sugar depending on how much sugar they leave in there. For an example, by the way, the wine we're drinking today is a Spätlese. It is 8% alcohol. So there's quite a bit of sugar left in this, but why is it still uber drinkable even on a hot day? Because of the acidity of the Riesling grape. And as I've mentioned many, many, many times, the reason Rieslings are so long-lived, in fact, probably the most ageable grapes on earth, is because the levels of sugar and acidity lend themselves to a very, very long-lived wine once you do it well. I'm not saying that your local Liebfrau Milch or blah, blah, blah is going to age well. Don't try it. Save those for Granny when she comes over for tea. And then you get into, because I'm running out of time, really quickly, the Bieren Auslese, the ice wine. So this is when you get increasing levels of sugar. Certain dates are involved when you must harvest them. And ice wine, which everybody asks me for, is in fact a very, very limited thing where you've got botrytis, which is a form of rot called noble rot, occurring in a very late harvest grape that you harvest really, really fast when alarms go off telling you that the level of ripeness and everything is absolutely perfect. It is an absolutely insane endeavor involving flashlights and crazy people on very steep slopes, which is why real ice wine costs an arm and a leg and another leg. So if you see a $30 ice wine, and you will, it's not made that way. And I'd be happy to get into that more, but I do want to use my remaining few seconds to talk about the fact that we have this Thursday our monthly tasting. We are featuring Terry Hall from Pure and Simple Apothecary, our good friend who is bringing several of her tinctures and other healthful supplies to show off. And it's really amazing stuff, folks. I tell you this. And we will be showing some of our more healthful options. We're going to be showing a Hoppy Buzz kombucha, which benefits the bees, uses honey, and is really quite good. Some organically produced wines and stuff, but Terry will really be the center point of this one. And we look forward to seeing you. So Thursday from 5 to 7 p.m. for that. And next week, we'll talk some more Germany, some Austria, and anything else I feel like talking about, because it's my segment. Peace.
Auf Wiedersehen.
Guten Tag.
Guten Abend. Banker Wine and Cheese, Message in the Bottle, every Tuesday here on Downtown.